an old man along the way, hoping to find some old forgotten words or ancient melodies. He turned to me as if to say, hurry boy, it's waiting there for you.
Oh, welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you, coast to coast, around the world on American Forces Network. We used to call it soft rock, sometimes adult contemporary or hot AC, but now we basically just call it yacht rock. And part of the Music Box series on HBO and streaming on Max, a series created by Bill Simmons, we're getting a new documentary, D-O-C-K, on purpose. It's called Yacht Rock, a documentary, and it's going to be debuting next Friday, the 29th, and the man behind that project joins us right now, Garrett Price. And Garrett, what was the impetus behind this? Because, I would imagine everything's growing. I've seen a band called Yachtly Crew in the last year. Is it because it's just getting so big now?
Absolutely. Hey, nice. Thanks for having me on, Rick. The beginning of this was the last documentary I made for HBO was on Woodstock 99, which took a lot of dark turns, and I knew for my next one, I wanted a feel-good, much lighter film, and there's no more feel-good film than the story of Yacht Rock. It's essentially a comeback story of these artists. I think a lot of people think it was called Yacht Rock back in the 70s, and it definitely was not. It comes from a comedy series in the early days of YouTube in the early 2000s, and it just stuck and redefined this music. And I thought that was really interesting.
It is. And when I think about Christopher Cross and Michael McDonald, Kenny Loggins, we just had Toto, I would think that Steely Dan wouldn't want to be included in Yacht Rock, even though they have some songs that sound yachty. What do you think?
Definitely not want to be included, but they definitely are. We describe them as kind of the big bang of Yacht Rock. You know, all these musicians like Michael McDonald and a lot of the Toto guys and Christopher Cross, they used a lot of the same players and producers that Steely Dan did. And Michael McDonald was a background singer for Steely Dan. So he took that sound with him to, I think, influence his own music as he went out in the world and became a name in the industry.
I only say that because I think the other guys I mentioned don't consider themselves badasses. Well, I think, you know, Fagan and company kind of think that they're like, you know, a little bit more cutting edge.
Absolutely, but you know, I spoke to Donald in this film, which mm-hmm. people will see, and he had some choice words to describe the genre, but he also let me use his music, so I think he gets it. It's a wink, you know. I think it's some of it's part of a character he keeps, none of them can deny that this word, this like bands like Yachtly Crew and Yacht Rock Review have brought a second life to all these artists' careers, and that's really interesting to me. I would always ask the artists, what was it like, you know, touring in the 70s and now touring in your 70s? I think it's really interesting that they're all still making music out there.
And then I think Michael McDonald can get tricky because I don't consider the Doobie Brothers Yacht Rock, but I consider his solo career Yacht Rock. Have you heard anything like that?
Yeah, well, I think if you look at the Doobie Brothers, it helps define the 70s. They start out as kind of a post-Woodstock boogie biker band, right? And then as the decade goes on, they get much smoother, as the Yacht Rock creators would say, and much jazzier. And I think that's with the addition of Michael McDonald when he took over from Tom Johnston. I think he really had that Steely Dan influence into the band. And you hear that later Doobie stuff, like Minute by Minute and What a Fool Believes. That checks all the boxes of Yacht Rock.
No, you have a good point there. I know Fred Armisen is involved in this, and I saw his solo show in person in the city last year, and he's such a great drummer and can play guitar as well. I mean, he seems like a perfect fit for this.
Absolutely. He's a punk rock guy.
Yeah.
You know, again, I it was really important for me to get contemporary artists and voices like Fred, like Questlove and Thundercat and Mac DeMarco that really, like, helped, I think, legitimize this music that a lot of people kind of abandoned, I feel like, after the 80s. And I think they deserve their place in music history.
Well, I think what's interesting, too, is, and like I'm in my 50s, and so, you know, people my age were kind of in control of things, but wherever you go, you could be in a Target, you could be in a dentist waiting room. It's all the songs from when I was in high school in the 80s. It just seems like, I don't think it's just because we're in charge. I think it's because nothing since then is better and just more relaxing than the 80s stuff, and that includes the yacht rock.
Right. I mean, the musicianship and the artistry behind this music, it's so incredible. You know, I think technology making music became people in their own rooms, you know, on a computer making music. These are guys coming together in these expensive recording studios, figuring things out together and making these sounds that you can't replicate these days. And it's so funny you bring up, this music is literally the soundtrack of our lives, whether we want it or not. If we're in a grocery store or a Target or a doctor's office, it's always there, right? And I think it holds a special place in all our hearts because of that.
Well, the other thing is, too, and by the way, we're speaking with Garrett Price, HBO Max's Yacht Rock documentary coming out next Friday. There's if you'll excuse the term, kind of a douchey thing about a guy who owns a yacht. He's got topsiders, his polo shirt has the collar turned up, he's got the Judge Smales captain hat. But in a way, calling it Yacht Rock is kind of like poking fun. It's kind of like winking at yourself in the mirror, right?
Absolutely. In fact, I have the guys that created the term, and they never really meant it to be like a nautical thing. It was because the music sounded so rich and expensive, like a yacht, and it just kind of took on its own, they basically created a monster with this thing, unintentionally. And the artists themselves, it was important for me to let them to kind of define their music and their, relationship with this word that has kind of redefined what they made 25 years earlier. And, a lot of them were kind of hesitant because it does sound like rich white people music to them, the word yacht rock, where, they were heavily influenced by, jazz and R&B, and they don't want people to look at their wrong. They wore their influence on their sleeve making this music. So they've come around. They realize it's out of reverence, the name came from. But that was interesting. That was interesting to me, and we explore that in the film, too.
Well, it's one of the most, I would say, my opinion, one of the most least offensive types of music. And I live in a very diverse area, and you could be anywhere, and it doesn't matter what your ethnic heritage is. You see people mouthing the lyrics. Everybody likes these songs deep down, even if they won't admit it.
Absolutely. We make a fine point that hip-hop artists were one of the big reasons why this music became popular again. They were sampling it because it was music, they heard on the radio stations in their neighborhood. So you have people like Warren G and De La Soul that took samples from Steely Dan and Michael McDonald for their hit, songs of the 90s. And that brought these artists back into the fold, too. But it's not offensive. I'm so excited it's coming out the day after Thanksgiving, after, a day of stuffing your food, probably having some arguments with the family. It's the perfect film to all sit together, just vibe out, relax, and listen to some great music together, right?
Yeah, and they always say, if you don't have a drunk uncle in your family, you're the drunkle.
I like that.
Speaking of De La Soul, Prince Paul's in this, right?
Absolutely. He's great. He heard Peg playing on his local black radio station, and he bought the album, had no idea Steely Dan were a white band until he bought the album and looked at the liner notes. So I think that goes to show how, how this music is so universal and crosses so many genres and cultures. And I think that's why it is so revered. And again, I think it's been abandoned a little bit as time has gone on, but it's making its resurrection, which I love, and I'm glad to be a part of that.
Do you explain where the name Steely Dan comes from, or would that make it rated M?
Yeah, not in this, but I do know where it's from. I'll let you, this is your show, I'll let you fill that in.
Yeah. Do you know what's interesting?
Like, the Steely Dan, I was going to say, Steely Dan and the Eagles had kind of the first hip-hop battle back in the day. They were kind of taking jabs at each other in their lyrics, which is kind of fun.
Wow, it's kind of a West Coast, East Coast thing, huh?
Absolutely, right?
You know, I think it's interesting, this is just an aside from me, is that when I see the names Porcaro, Lukather, and Paich, and I'm like, I have no idea who that is, and those are the guys in Toto, and I thought, oh, I wonder why they never got individually famous? Because every other band, you can name one or two guys. Is that just me?
No, I think they were such a unit, right, Toto? And I think, again, people, they're session players that played on so many albums. It'll blow your mind when you watch the movie what famous albums they were a part of. And then they came together. It was their high school band, and they became Toto. And, you know, they made songs like Africa and Rosanna. But they always considered themselves a unit, and no one bigger than the other. I think that's really special. And it makes a lot of sense, you know, when you hear their music. You know, Africa, that they talk about in the film, like, half of them didn't think it even should have been on the album. It was the last song on side two of their record.
What?
They abandoned it.
Really?
Is that crazy? Yeah.
That is crazy. So did you have any pushback from, like, Gino Vannelli saying, how can you have Ambrosia and not me?
You know, I stuck with kind of the Mount Rushmore that the creators of the web series had in their series. So it's Steely Dan, Michael McDonald with and without the Doobies, Christopher Cross, Kenny Loggins, and Toto. And I think from there, I let people argue what is or isn't yacht rock. That's another thing that's really beautiful about this arbitrary genre, is the arguments of people saying, that's a yacht rock song, that's not a yacht rock song. You know, I think it's important to understand that, you know, most of yacht rock is soft rock, but not all soft rock is yacht rock.
And then finally, I guess by definition, the ultimate yacht rock song would have to be Chris Cross's Sailing, right?
I think so. Although the guys that created the name say that What a Fool Believes is the ultimate song. They have something called the Yachtsky Scale on Yacht or Yacht.com that rates every yacht rock song on if it's yacht rock or not. And if it crosses the 50-point threshold, it's a yacht rock song. So I implore everyone to check it out. It's pretty great.
We will check it out. Day after Thanksgiving, HBO Original. It's called Music Box Yacht Rock, a documentary. And as I said, this will be Friday the 29th at 9 o'clock, streaming on Max as well. We've been speaking with the director, Garrett Price. Garrett, this sounds like a lot of fun, and thank you for coming on today.
Thanks a lot, man. Watch it with your drunkle.
Or myself, yes. All right, thank you. And we'll take a quick break, and we'll listen to a little more Yacht Rock on the way out.